Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. Welcome to volume 30. So as we go into 30 to 36, we are now coming to the icing on the cake. We had all the preparation in the introduction and the foundations in volumes 1 to 4. Then we had the building of the house in volumes 5 to 10. And then in 11 and 12, you have the roof, the whole thing is completed. And then from volume 13 onwards, we have what I call the furnishing of the house and the gardens, so that you would see the whole thing in perspective. So in a sense, everything has been said. And so we come to this section in which all the fine print is put in, the dots and the commas and so on. And so we begin with November the 4th, 1931, and we start off with talking about confidence in God, surrendering to God, and what happens in this very deep relationship between God and ourselves. And before I read anything, I want to give you an image to work with, because you might have the impression that, you know, going into these higher volumes, it'll be beyond what we can understand. Forget about it. You will understand it. So I want to give you an image for abandonment and trust, because you're going to see in line one that Louisa says, "My Jesus, center and life of my little soul, my littleness is such that I feel an extreme need for you." Okay, so we're starting there. And the image I want to give you is the image of the day that an infant was put into your arms. And that child was a child that you had the privilege of giving life to. You were absolutely thrilled in looking at this child, this miracle that has landed in your lap. You decided that this was the greatest thing that ever happened to you and gave the child a special name and everything. But the child's real name was Need, N-E-E-D. That was the child's real name. And that child had an extreme need for you. The child just needed absolutely everything, starting with clothing and food and drink and comfort and life and a family and a name and an address and a country and a culture and a religion and absolutely everything. And the strange thing is that you set yourself to supplying all of this for no apparent reason, except that the child was yours. And a little summary of the volumes, you know, that are between the 20 and the 30, is that the Lord has been saying that when he looks at us, he sees an image of himself. And when you looked at that child, you saw an image of yourself. As Jesus said, "I see another me, another myself." So you saw another yourself in looking at this child. And it didn't occur to you at any point to think that there was about 25 years of hard labour ahead for you, that you were going to have to service this need in every possible way, and it was going to cost you a bomb to do it, and you were going to have to go out and get a job and work hard, and you were going to have to do this and that and the other. You gave no thought to it whatsoever. There was only one thought in your mind, and that was love. This child is another me. And instantly you want absolutely everything for that child, absolutely everything. Now, can the child do anything to deserve what you give them? The answer, of course, is no. Do they appreciate it? Half the time, they don't. Now, we've got that in the earlier volumes where Jesus has told us that the name of the human race or the title for the human race is the ungrateful ones. God does absolutely everything for us and we don't even acknowledge it at all. So we can be like very ungrateful children. And a mystery begins in the relationship that is love going out from you and that love being received by the little one in your arms. And there is this reciprocation going on. And the amazing thing is that the only thing you are looking for from the child is cooperation and love. You're not actually looking for anything else. And when the child gives you cooperation and love, you feel that everything is just absolutely fine. That's exactly what Jesus is talking about in these volumes. That we are now the newborn infants in his arms. Our name is need. We need absolutely everything. And he's been telling us in the volumes leading up to this that he does supply our needs. He gives us absolutely everything. The sun and the light and the vegetation and the food and the company. You couldn't make the list of what he actually supplies for us. And all he's looking for is cooperation and love. This reciprocation, that love is a circle. It goes out from the parent to the child and must come back from the child to the parent. Otherwise, love is the most excruciating experience you can have. It's not meant to be all one way. It has to be two way. And as you watch the development between the parent and the child, an inseparable link develops between them. A link that not only survives death, but my mother is dead 49 years. The link goes on. It goes on into eternity. It's an inseparable link that actually develops. And this is what Jesus has been trying to tell us in the volumes leading up to this, that this giving and receiving, this reciprocation on our part, it develops this inseparable link between us and him. He is the supply. I remember many years ago having a dialogue with the Lord, and nobody ever told me I could have a dialogue like this. And I was a bit like Abraham stepping out, not sure that I was walking on water, you know. And I said, Lord, I am poverty. He said, I am plenty. Now he answered immediately, and that was my shock. He said, I am plenty. I said, okay, I am a sinner. He said, I'm your savior. Lord, I'm hungry. He said, I'm your nourishing food. And it went on and on and on. Lord, I am sick. I am your health. I am your life. I am everything. And it went on and on for ages. And in the end, I said to him, following the language you will get between John the Baptist and Jesus in John chapter 1, I said, I am she who is not. And he said, I am he who is the I am. That was the total solution. And so I ended the conversation with him by saying, Lord, I'm not having a problem. He said, neither am I. It's an incredible thing, this inseparable bond. But we have to know the bond. We have to know how the thing actually works. And I think you need to do a meditation on this, because all you've got to do is go back to your own parenting. And you've done it. And if you go back to that and realize that you've done this, you are involved in an inseparable relationship with children. Then what Jesus says and what Louisa says here from volumes 30 to 36 is going to make enormous sense. I hope that helps you. Sometimes the language is difficult because it's a translation and it's very high mystical theology. So you might think, oh, this is way beyond what I can do. And the answer, it isn't. The Lord will never ask something of you that you can't do. And at the point at which you feel you can't do it, you will go into the dialogue just as we're going to go into it now on November the 4th. So let's begin. Louisa said, my Jesus, center and life of my little soul. You see, we're in the higher volumes. Everything is set. Okay. And she said, my littleness is such that I feel an extreme need for you. Now, that's the position of the infant in its mother's arms. The child has an extreme need. It just needs absolutely everything. I feel an extreme need for you, she said, my love, to hold me tightly in your arms. Just think of the child in its mother's arms. And I have an extreme need, she said, that you would be moved to pity for my great weakness. Now, we're in the higher volumes. We're not in volume one. And so here you have somebody who has reached a very high degree in holiness. And maybe I'm insulting her by just saying that she has reached an extraordinary height. And yet her experience of her relationship with the Lord is that of an extreme need for him. Now, this means that this woman is truly walking on water. She really is walking in faith. You see, when we start out in this relationship, oh, we think we could do it ourselves. I mean, look at the apostles in the boat in the storm in Mark chapter 4. And they told Jesus he could rest. They were the experts on the water. But when the storm came and the boat was really threatened, they needed the sleeping one. They felt an extreme need for him, and it was only at that point that he could show them who he was. And so this sense of an extreme need for the Lord is that at long last we understand the poverty of human nature. John 15:5, without me you can do nothing. I presume you've proved it. I've proved it. I could have written it. Without me you can do nothing. But then St. Paul says that with Christ, I can do anything. And this extreme need is suddenly realizing that if I don't stay absolutely connected with the Lord and absolutely relying on him, I am not going to be able to do anything that he's asking of me. And in the months and years ahead of us, which are going to be extremely difficult, we're going to have to learn how to cling to the Lord with absolutely everything we have. Okay. She said, I am tiny. It doesn't matter what God has done for us. We of ourselves are nothing. And you know that the little ones have need of swaddling clothes to strengthen their members. In other words, I just love this. Just remember, this is the beginning of volume 30. And Louisa is talking like we would have expected her to talk in volume 1. But she didn't actually talk like this very much in volume 1. It's as you go on and on in this relationship with God that you become painfully aware of the fact that I can do nothing. I cannot have a good thought. I can do nothing without him. Oh yeah, I can sin, yeah. I can go down the way of evil, but I can do nothing good. And so I am tiny, and you know that the little ones have need of swaddling clothes, and they have the need of milk. So back to basics, I think it's really, really interesting. So she's not saying that she has reached such a high degree of holiness that God help the rest of you, you have a long journey to go. She's not looking at it like that at all. She sees herself exactly as she saw herself before. And because she is looking truthfully at the nothingness of human nature, and that you can expect nothing of human nature, if only we could come to this ourselves, that you can expect nothing of human nature, then you'll throw yourself on the Lord and let everything come from him. That's when the miracles are really, really going to show up. So I still have need of milk, which the mother gives to nourish and enable us to grow. So there's the image of the baby at the breast, actually sucking the mother's breast. And I feel an intense need. Now, I want you to notice that words have actually changed from volume 20 to volume 30. We've already had the word extreme need, and now we have the intense need. These are very strong words. I have the intense need for you to swaddle me with the swaddling clothes of love. Now, from volume 30 to 36, it's all about love. God is love. It's all about love. This relationship is all about love. And the only motivation that Jesus is going to take from us is a motivation of love. If you do it out of love, then yes, you're in the right place. So she says, I have an intense need for you to swaddle me with the swaddling clothes of love and clasping me to your divine breast, that you would give me the milk of your divine will for food. Now, she's talking about the divine will in the most basic language that you could possibly use. And if you gave this exact message to a very small child, they would understand. all you've got to say is, just as that baby needs the very substance of its mother in order to live, so we need the substance of the Lord. And they'd say, yeah, that's true. A child will get this. It's just adults have difficulty with it. And so she says, hear, O Jesus, I feel the need of your life. Now, she feels the need of his love. She feels the need of his nourishment. She feels the need of the divine will. She feels the need of his life. This is an I need you message. And when we're beginning to grow spiritually, we're going to come to the realization that we need the Lord more than anybody else on the planet. I'm forever telling him that I need you more than anybody else on this earth. Nobody needs you as much as I do. Because I need you for everything. They think they can do it all by themselves. And so you're getting somewhere when you actually know you can't. You can't move a finger. You can't do a thing. I feel the need of your life in order to live, she said. Now, living is on the physical, mental, emotional and spiritual levels. I want to live off you, my translation says of you for some reason. In other words, I want everything from you, all my nourishment, all my life. I want everything from you. I want you to be everything to me, just as the parent is everything to the infant, everything. And the infant can do nothing for themselves. So, and then she said, you'll be doing the writing. This is very interesting because in the volumes between about volume 6 and 10, he was all the time asking her to write more, and she was writing very short messages. And he has coaxed her to write more and more and more, and she has found the solution that if she can cling to him absolutely, then he will be doing everything. He will also be doing the writing. Now, he has told us in earlier volumes that he is, in fact, the author of this message and that he has inspired all the words that she has written down. So you will be doing the writing, she said, not I. And you will be able to write what you want and the way you want it. Now, she's referring to the fact that he has corrected her many times about the writing. Therefore, she said, the task is yours, not mine. Now, we need to come to this level of revelation as well, that the task of spreading the kingdom of the divine will is his. We just have the immense privilege of being part of it, and that if we cooperate as much as we possibly can, that he will actually do everything through us. But we can do nothing. And we've got to really learn how to step back so that he can come forward and that people will actually hear him. And they will see him and they will see his responses. And they'll start saying, well, there's something about this person. This one is different. And then when times of real trouble come, they know who to turn to. And so I would remind you of the statement of St. Francis of Assisi to his own friars back in the 12th century, when he said to them, now you must go out and you must preach the gospel to everybody, he said. And speak if necessary. I love the and speak if necessary. In other words, the preaching of the gospel is the very way you live. The very way you live. It's all there. So Louisa said, I'll only lend you my hand. In other words, if you want to write, I'll give you my hand. And we say to him, if you want to walk somewhere, I'll give you my feet. If you want to speak, I will give you my tongue. If you want to look lovingly at somebody, I'll give you my eyes. I will give you whatever you want. Now, he's going to be telling us this, that there's something we have to give him so that he can actually work this miracle on the earth. And even before it comes up in the messages, I just want to remind you that when Jesus wanted to work the miracle of multiplying the loaves and the fishes, he wouldn't do it until somebody gave him what I call a seed gift. Give him something to work with. It's not magic. And he's not a magician. When we celebrate the Holy Eucharist, we bring the offertory gifts to him. We give him the elements of bread and wine so that he can work his miracle with that. So he asks something of us. And that's going to come out in the first messages that we have here. So Louisa said then, abandoning myself in the arms of Jesus, that's Psalm 1:3:1. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. Now, a weaned child on its mother's lap is a very, very happy child, because I have been given so much love. I have been given everything I needed, and I have grown, and I'm a different person than I was a year ago because of all this incredible love that has been given to me. Now, we should be able to look back as well in our relationship with the Lord and realize that we're not the way we were. I love quoting Ebenezer Scrooge, I'm not the man I was. I have been changed radically, okay? And that's the big testimony, that the Lord has changed us. So Louisa abandons herself in the Lord's arms, and she does this just like a child relaxing in its mother's arms. And she said, I heard his most sweet voice whispering in my ear, saying to me, my little daughter, the more you remain abandoned in me. Now, we're going to be talking about abandonment and surrender and rest of it. But if you have the image of the infant in the mother's arms, you're okay. Now, the more you remain abandoned in me, he said, the more you will feel my life in you. It's actually not rocket science. It's not out of this world. It's just plain logic. He said, if you abandon yourself to me, you will actually experience my life. And the more you do it, the more of me you will actually experience. And I will take the place of primary life in your soul. Now, this is the very important step that he wants to happen in us, that the self starts out as the primary life and the human will has the primary life. And very slowly we turn over that human will to him so that he can begin to be the primary life in our soul. Now, if you put that in other language, it means that Francis is no longer reigning in Francis's life, but Jesus is reigning in Francis's life. Now, I'm saying Francis so that if I say Louisa, you might have it up in the air too much, but if I say Francis, then you know I've come down quite a lot. So this replacement has got to actually happen. Now, when he is the primary life in the soul, everything's going to be divine life. Everything's going to be a divine will in the soul. And therefore, everything that he wants to do in that person can actually happen. So I will take the place of primary life in your soul. Know that true confidence in me is what forms the arms of the soul and the feet in order to climb up to me. Now, I've told those of you who have been with me for years, I've quoted this many, many times to you, that Saint Therese of Lisieux said that you will receive from God exactly and only what you have confidence to receive. Many people read about things like this, they can even approve of them, but they don't reach out to actually experience it. Okay? And confidence is extremely important. You look at the infant in the mother's arms again, and the child is completely trusting, because confidence is trust. And we get absolutely nowhere with the Lord without trust. Some of you have heard me say again numerous times that Jesus told me many years ago to tell everybody I ever taught in any country in the world that what he wants from us is that we would trust him beyond reason. In other words, you stop using your own limited mind to say what God will or will not do. You go way outside of that. Trust him beyond reason. Don't let your own thinking block you from trusting in God. And if you find that you're not able to trust him at a particular point, whatever the challenge is, all you say to him is, Lord, I want you to trust yourself in me. I want you to take over the reins and trust yourself in me and bring me round to actually join you in trusting you. Because all you're saying there is, I can't do it. So I'm asking you to take over and let this miracle actually happen. So this trust or confidence makes the arms and feet of the soul, in other words, what you can work with and where you can go. Without that trust, you can't do anything and you're not going anywhere. So this is what enables you to climb up to me and to clasp me so tightly that I cannot unbind myself. From her is the soul, from you. So if you have this enormous confidence and trust, now all you've got to do is think of a small child. Now, it's a bit bigger than the infant this time. Take a 2, 3 or 4 year old climbing up on its father's knees and throwing its arms around the dad and absolutely clinging to them and saying, "You're the greatest dad on the planet." And all your resistance to whatever they're going to ask you disappears, because that trust works miracles. The trust works miracles. And that's what Jesus is saying. Get out of your small thinking, he said, and come to me and actually take hold of me. Clasp me to yourself. So the one who has no confidence, he says, has no arms or feet. They're a poor, crippled spiritually. And therefore, your confidence, he said, will be your victory over me. That's wonderful. That is, we conquer the Lord through love. And I will hold you tightly in my arms, attached to my breast, and give you the continuous milk of my divine will. In other words, to put that in very simple English, he's saying, you need to want this divine will badly enough to reach out and not take no for an answer. It's not a devotion. It's not pretty prayers. And Jesus is saying, if you want it, you're going to have to do something about it. You're going to have to reach out. Now, he said, you must know that each time the soul does my will, in other words, each time we act in the divine will, I recognize myself in that person. Now, he's going to be talking about now mutual recognition. And this mutual recognition is terribly important. I have to bring you back to the infant. I mean the tiny infant. Because that tiny infant begins by automatically sucking the mother's breast. Doesn't think about it at all. Eventually, it dawns on the child that there's a person behind the food. And there's an incredible moment for the mother when the child reaches up the little finger up to the face and smiles. There's a person behind the food. And this is what we have to be able to do spiritually as well, is go beyond the gifts of the Lord to him. Go beyond his graces to him. Go beyond his miracles to him. To actually want him. And this is where Louisa is at from volume 30 to 36. She wants him absolutely. And it's wonderful. And Jesus says that every time the divine will is done in our acts, he recognizes himself, because the divine will is the operational part of the Trinity. He said, I recognize my works, I recognize my steps, I recognize my words, and I recognize my love. It happens that the Creator recognizes himself and his works in the soul. That's because this soul, I'm not using the word creature now, I'll use it seldom when it's much more appropriate, because all the time he's talking about your soul. So it's in you. And so he's saying, I recognize myself and my works in you as you operate the divine will. He recognizes himself. Now, when we're looking at tiny children developing as well, we recognize parental features and parental actions and all the rest of it. And the child imitates the parents. The child doesn't have any other model. And so the Lord told me many, many, many years ago that he has revealed everything to us in the relationship of spouses, the relationship between spouses and their children, in the entire mystery of the family, that he's actually hidden in the mystery of the family. And that if we would only look at our own lives, we would find him. That we don't have to go into a huge mystical state to find him. He's all around us. And we just have to begin to actually recognize him in the ordinary things of every day. And so, as we do our divine acts, he recognizes himself and his works in us. Now, the other side is there as well. So, the soul or the person themselves, while they're actually operating in the divine will or doing their divine will acts, they project themselves in the Creator and recognize themselves in him. It's a mutual recognition. So it's the infant recognizing the parent and the parent recognizing the infant. This is mutual recognition. Okay. And this mutual recognition is terribly important. You cannot reach a high place of union with God without knowing it. You cannot be in a very deep place of love with the Lord without you absolutely knowing about it. There is mutual recognition between the two. And you cannot have this wonder going on in your own soul without you being aware of it. And so it's the mutual recognition. This recognizing themselves in each other, God and the soul. Now, do you see that I'm reading creature correctly? God and the soul calls for the first act of creation, and God goes out of his rest and continues the work of creation with this particular soul who lives and operates in his will. So what he's saying is that as we operate in the divine will, we give him the stimulus to pick up and continue working the creation that came to a halt with the fall of man. And he will bring us right back to our origin, right back to the place before the fall. People use very big language there. They say prelapsarian times. I don't like big words. As before the fall, he will bring you right back to your origin. And that's a place of incredible freedom. And so one of the keys for recognizing how you are developing in the divine will is that you become more and more and more free. And this freedom is interior. No matter what people do to you on the outside, you have this enormous freedom inside. And I think that the journey into union with God is a journey into freedom. And the one who was completely free to give life and create everything he wanted to, and the one who has come out of the slavery of sin and come out of that place of narrowness where they were, that they come and they both meet in this place of freedom. It's really fantastic. So when this mutual recognition takes place, the Lord continues the work of creation with this soul who lives and operates in his will. In fact, he said, our work didn't end. It only had a pause of rest. That's with the fall. And the soul, by doing our will, calls us to work. Now, that's wonderful language now. That's like we ring a bell and we say, Lord, the human race is beginning to wake up. We're beginning to realize we cannot live without your divine will. And so one by one, we're coming back to you, trying to do your will. And so he has the immense joy, and he's going to tell us that, the immense joy of being able to pick up where he left off. So they call us to work. And he said it's a sweet call, because for us, work means new happiness. It means new joys. It means prodigious conquests. And so it's when we pick up the challenge to live in the divine will that we can give immense joy to God. Now, in the volumes earlier to this, the Lord has spoken eloquently about us giving incredible sorrow to God through the disasters of the human will. And here he's talking about the immense joy that can be given to him. So we do nothing other than continue our outpourings of love, power, goodness, and our unreachable wisdom. Now, if you have your own book, please underline this. You're not surprised at the love and the power and the goodness. One of the things I keep saying to people is one of the signs that God is really working in a person's life is that they grow more and more and more in wisdom. Wisdom is the first great stroke of the divine brush. You find it in Isaiah chapter 11, wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and the fear of the Lord. Sorry, I don't give you the new stuff. Wisdom is the very first stroke of the divine brush in us. If we're not growing in wisdom, we really, really have to get help. There's something wrong, because Jesus was wisdom incarnate, and we're growing in his likeness. Okay. Now, wisdom is the divine ability to choose correctly on the earth. And wisdom gives you eyes that sees through all the fluff of the world and sees through all the nonsense that's thrown at you. Let me give you an example. It's in Acts chapter 4. You have Peter and Paul standing before the Sanhedrin on trial for their lives, and they have just cured somebody. And so the accusations are coming at them. And for once, Peter took a deep breath and allowed the Holy Spirit to touch him before he opened his mouth. And then out comes this incredible wisdom. He said, "You mean we're on trial today for an act of kindness to a cripple?" He said, "Is that how far we've gone?" And he cut through all the fluff, all the nonsense. He showed just in that one sentence that all the accusations were pure stupid nonsense. Wisdom is a very wonderful thing. If you don't have it, ask the Lord urgently for it and start reading the books of wisdom. In the book of wisdom itself, there's a most wonderful prayer that God would give you wisdom. It's fantastic. And the book of wisdom is the only book in the Bible that actually described God. And it gives 21 perfections that are in God. It's absolutely incredible. Wisdom is wonderful. So don't miss out on that one, because you can't have a very high place in the divine will without this wisdom. And Jesus says that it was this unreachable wisdom which actually gave the beginning to creation. And Jesus was incarnate wisdom. And of course, that's what gave the redemption as well. And the Holy Spirit is the Spirit of wisdom, and he's the one who gives sanctification. Now, the soul feels that her God does not rest for her. Now, the translation says feels and gives you the impression that this is in your body. And so the translation needs to be more accurate than that, because at this stage, it's not in your body that you're feeling anything. This is complete matter of the spirit. So you should say the soul is aware. Because it's not going to happen without your knowledge. The soul is aware. So she's aware that God is working within her. You see, if I use the expression she's aware, it makes more sense. By calling the Most Holy Trinity, the soul recognizes us. By calling us, she opens the doors to us. By calling us, she gives us dominion. And by calling us, she gives us the freedom to do what we want in our soul. Notice the call. Ring the bell. Notice the call. We have to call. That's why I said to you a few minutes ago that the very first thing we're confronted with in these higher volumes is how much do you actually want divine will? And we're not talking about studying it or listening to wonderful retreats or anything else on it. It's how much do you personally want it, because that is what you will work for. When she calls us, the doors open. Ask and you will receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened unto you, Jesus said. So, when she calls, she gives us dominion and she gives us all the freedom to do what we want in her soul. Now, what do they want? They want that the original order of the creation be restored to us, so that the divine will can reign on the earth as it does in heaven. That means that this soul will reach its ultimate perfection. It means that this soul will actually experience heaven on the earth. That's what they want. So we will do a work worthy of our creative hands, which I've just described. Therefore, never let our divine will escape you if you want our work to be continuous. Now, if you let the divine will escape you, it means you go off on a break and back to the human will and back to worldly stuff. The divine will be your voice bearer and ours, in which you will emit your voice to call us, and we will hear the sweet whispering in our ear and will immediately descend into our own will within your soul. Now, we heard that very, very simply from the very beginning. If you want it, I'll do it. But we need to also see it in this very, very rich way that it is given to us here. That when we call the Most Holy Trinity to come and reign in us, they will hear this as a sweet whispering in their ear. In other words, it's not raucous to them. It's not horrible. It's actually sweet. And we will immediately descend. Now, notice that there is no gap between the call and the descent. And we will descend into our own will within the soul. So the Most Blessed Trinity is reigning in glory in heaven. It's present in all of creation, as you read in all the other volumes. Otherwise, nothing can exist. But in a new way, they will be able to descend into our soul as into a tabernacle of the Most High. 1 Corinthians 3:16, know you not that you are the temple of the living God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? And they will do it immediately. In fact, you must know that the continuous acts make a fulfilled life, or form a fulfilled life. People who are starting out in volume one, they can ask you, oh, how many of these acts do I have to do? They've got to be continuous, just as if you want to live, your breathing must be continuous. If you want to live, you must continuously, on a daily basis, take food. There are things you absolutely must do continuously if you're to live. If your heart doesn't keep beating, you won't live. If the blood doesn't keep circulating around the body, you won't live. Some things have to be continuous acts, and so the acts in the divine will have to be continuous as well, so that the divine life can flourish. Just as the human life won't flourish without certain continuous acts, neither will the divine life flourish. So, you must know that the continuous acts form or make a fulfilled life and works. What is not continuous can be called simply the effects of my will. They're not really life that is formed in the soul, and the effects can vanish. In other words, if you're not going to persevere with this, you can actually fall away from divine will. You may have had it at one point, and you can actually fall away. And it's your own decision. You have withdrawn. Therefore, Jesus said to her, have courage and have confidence and always go forward. So there's the battle cry. Always forward, crossing the sea of the divine will. Wonderful stuff that. So after this, Louisa said, I was following the acts that my highest good Jesus had done in his humanity. So she's doing the rounds of redemption while he was on earth. And making himself heard, he said, my daughter, my human life had no act of life. In other words, he didn't allow the human will any outlet. But rather it was in act of receiving the continuous act of the divine will. So he's living continuously every second, every nanosecond of his life in the divine will, which I, as the word of the celestial father, possessed. Naturally enough, he had the divine will within him because he was both divine and human. Therefore, all my acts, watch this, all my pains, all my prayers, all my breaths, all my heartbeats that I did, as my human will would undergo the life of the divine will, they formed many ties to re-tie the human wills to mine. So what Jesus is saying there is that because he was operating in the divine will continuously, he was able to redo the human nature from conception to death. And therefore, he was able to redo, reform, retie, and reconnect the human will with the divine will. Now, when we live continuously in the divine will as well, he allows that to happen. We can participate. And since these human wills, he said, were like houses, some collapsing, some damaged, and still others were reduced to ruin, my divine will operating in my humanity, he said, prepared with my acts the helps that were needed to sustain the ones that were collapsing, cement the ones that were damaged, and raise again upon their very ruins the houses that are destroyed. And very often a house is a symbol of the soul. And that is true. People who operate in psychology as well will tell you that if you dream of a house, you're usually dreaming of yourself. Very interesting insight if you have dreams about houses. Jesus said, I did nothing for myself. I did not have any need. Now, if you're using your own book, will you please colour that and really, really think about it? He had no need. When you look at worldly people and people operating in the divine will, they seem to have nothing else, only needs. I want this and I want that and I want the other, and I must have a better car and I must have a better phone and I must have a better computer and I must have a better house and I must have a better place and I must have a better holiday, and I need and I need and I need. The extraordinary thing is that the closer you get to God, the less you need, because The computer and the car and all the other stuff that I named there, they're all outside of you. You don't need them at all. Not in any real sense. They're useful. But they're not in a real need. And when you have the divine will reigning in you, you actually have everything you need. Jesus said he only had one need. And he said, my only need was love and wanting to be loved back. Now there you have Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind and being, and so on. Why was this Jesus' only need? The answer is actually very simple. God is love. He created the heavens and the earth out of love. He created us out of love. And the only creatures that are going to get back to him in his heaven, what this text calls the celestial fatherland, the only people who will get there are people who have loved. There will be no point in us going back to God in death and saying, well, I was a teacher. That's not going to get you there. Did you love your pupils? I was a doctor. Did you love your patients? I was a neighbor. Did you love your neighbors? It's love is the essence of everything. And you get that in Matthew 25, that the entire judgment is on love. So he said, my need was to love. And you know that in all the volumes leading up to this, that God has been looking for a love response from us. And as I said to you at the beginning of this session, that what the parent is looking for from the child is a love response. And, you know, if you have a little daughter who wants to come in and say, mummy, you're the greatest mummy on earth, and she pulls your favourite rose from the front garden and she hasn't pulled it correctly or anything, and she comes in and puts the rose in front of you and she says, mummy, I love you. The thing you could not pay for is that spontaneous love of the child. You couldn't. That's the treasure. And that the child ran in spontaneously to tell you this. Any parent will tell you that they're their glory moments. And that's what Jesus is talking about. It's his glory moment as well. When we come back to him, really, genuinely loving him. Not just saying the words, my God, I love you. Amen. People very far back in religion, who only have a religion but not a relationship, will say that. Someone who really loves knows how to say it and knows how to communicate it, and they know what to do as well. And so this is all about love. So my only need, he said, was love and wanting to be loved back. Now, in order to receive all my helps, he's just told us that he made all the helps for us so that we could come back to him, and all my pains and works as operating works, in other words, stuff that will actually do something inside of you, as a speaking voice and helping messengers, the soul must unite her will to mine. In other words, for all that he did for us in redemption to actually do something inside of us and produce results, we've got to re-tie our human will to the divine. She must unite her will to mine. And immediately, now notice again, immediately, there's no delay. He wants this so badly that if we give the slightest sign that we want to go down this road, he's going to say yes. And immediately she will feel herself re-tied to me. Now, the way people would express that is, a new peace has come to you. You feel inside in your soul that, yeah, that was right. You get the confirmation deep inside of you. Yeah. That's what they mean by feel. Again, it's not physical. And all my acts will offer themselves around to do their offices in order to sustain, cement and raise again the human will. So he will do everything if we give him a chance. As soon as the soul unites herself and decides to do my divine will, all of my acts, like a fierce army, place themselves as defense of this soul. And they form the boat of safety. I love that expression, because there you have Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41 again, that I mentioned earlier. Rabbi, we're going down. He said, have you still no faith? How could you be going down if the Lord is in the boat? You can't be going down if the Lord is in the boat. There's no possibility of that. And so the boat of safety is actually the divine will itself. In the stormy sea of life, and it's going to be very stormy in the months and years ahead. But for one who does not do my will, I could say that she receives nothing, nor can she receive, because my will alone is the outgiver of everything that I did for love of creatures. In other words, only the divine will can deliver what Jesus actually won for us. He did all of this work in the divine will for us, and only the divine will can actually deliver it. So the divine will, when we enter into it, then we can open up and we can receive. And the extraordinary thing is, you can receive as much as you want. Everything again comes back to where I started, and that is, how much, how badly do we actually want the divine will? I'm going to stop there.